I'm Brandi Cruz. Today on Undivided, she called cops pigs, encouraged rioting, and said this.
They've deemed me a threat to security. And they need to.
And now she's in charge of crafting school safety plans for a local district. Plus, a young man charged in a series of attacks on elderly Asian Americans perfectly sums up the problem with our criminal justice system.
Can't get house arrest? You let people out who shoot at people get house arrest.
And
it's not a thing that happens just on the street. People don't just come up and try to rob people on the street.
Pretending we're not in the midst of a crime crisis isn't cute or clever. That and more coming up today on Undivided. Support the show by signing up at undividedpod.com. Back, baby, after a week off, wedded bliss. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Diving right in today, how many times on the show have we talked about the state of our criminal justice system? How many times have we talked about the reason why so many young men in particular are committing violent acts? It's because they do not believe that there are going to be consequences for their actions. There's a reason they don't believe that there are going to be consequences for their actions, because the criminal justice system has shown time and time again that there are not going to be consequences for their action. And if you don't believe me, some people might see my show and say, oh, crazy right-wing lunatic Brandi doesn't know what she's talking about when it comes to the criminal justice system. That's fine, because there's actually a young man who has been charged with very serious crimes who actually agrees with me on this point. We're going to play a clip from him coming up in a moment, but it has to do with a string of attacks on elderly Asian Americans in South Seattle that we've been covering on the show pretty extensively. While I was gone for a week or so getting married, there was an arrest, multiple arrests made in what have been a horrific string of crimes, where you have these what appeared to be young black men in the videos who were attacking mostly elderly Asian American individuals, mostly in South Seattle, and they would steal valuables from them, etc. And thankfully, the Seattle Police Department had committed what little resources they have to trying to solve this. It had become kind of a political to-do, with the mayor speaking out about it. And now there have been at least 5 arrests associated specifically with that string of attacks. There were some other people arrested as part of the larger investigation that went on. But let me talk about these suspects first. Let's talk about the adults first. And I use that term pretty loosely because they are young men, but under the eyes of the law, they are adults. And then I'm going to talk about the juvenile that's involved in this. 28-year-old DeMarcus Pate, 26-year-old Deleuno Habtai, 30-year-old Javez Paul Tubbs, and 32-year-old Tyrone Marr. Now, you might be wondering, hey, Brandi, how come you have pictures of them? Because under the law in Washington State, the King County Jail, if someone's booked, can't release their photographs. Well, we have pictures of them because the Department of Corrections had pictures of them, because, shock of the century, amongst them, there's a long list of criminal acts that they've already committed. And our friend Jonathan Cho got their images from the Department of Corrections. And I know that won't come as a surprise to anyone that, oh my gosh, people who were allegedly committing a string of violent attacks on elderly Asian Americans had a criminal history. Yeah. But what's interesting when it comes to what they were charged with and those individuals, and they were given high bail, which knock me over with a feather. Can't believe it that they were actually given high bail. DeMarcus Pate, $1.5 million bail, charged with unlawful possession of a firearm. Deleuno Habti, $2 million bail, charged with 3 counts unlawful possession of a firearm. Javez Tubbs, $1.5 million bail, charged with unlawful possession of a firearm. Tyrone Marr, $1.25 million bail, charged with 2 counts unlawful possession of a firearm. But I have to say that one of the individuals who has the most charges being levied against them in connection with these attacks is a 16-year-old. And honestly, I think that's probably because the adults are like, hey, you do this stuff, you do the worst of the worst aspects of this, because they're just going to give you a slap on the wrist and let you go. The 16-year-old charged with 3 counts of robbery, 3 counts of burglary, a single charge of theft. Now, he's being held, again, knock me over with a feather, in juvenile detention, being detained right now with no bail. Now, Como News was in the courtroom for this 16-year-old's court appearance, and this 16-year-old seemed utterly shocked that he was not going to be allowed to go home to mommy and daddy.
Can't get house arrest? You let people out who shoot at people get house arrest.
Well, I'm not letting you out.
Why not?
Why not? Maybe you should ask Mr. Minor why not.
I mean, I don't even know what else could more perfectly illustrate the point I've been making about our criminal justice system and why people like this 16-year-old feel as if they can commit acts of violence and get away with it. He is utterly baffled as to why he would not get house arrest, telling the judge, well, you let people who shoot at each other get house arrest. And he says, well, I'm not letting you out, which, love a judge saying that to this 16-year-old, sending a message that, hey, no, what you did is very serious. The kid responds, well, why not? And the judge says, ask your attorney. This is a 16-year-old charged with 3 counts of robbery, 3 counts of burglary, and a single theft charge tied to what has been one of the most violent and egregious strings of crime that I have seen in my time in Seattle. And he is utterly dumbfounded as to why he does not get to go home on house arrest. So when we say repeatedly, again, this is common sense stuff. This is common sense stuff. If you know that there are not going to be consequences for your actions, because you've seen, you know, your friends go and do serious things and there's not consequences for their actions, if you know or you believe that there are not going to be consequences for your criminal conduct, the only thing that would stop you, I guess, is a moral center, a moral compass. But absent a moral center and a moral compass, then yeah, you're going to commit crimes. You're going to commit crimes for money, for drugs, for gang reasons, because one of the things that would disincentivize you from committing crimes would be the prospect of serious repercussions. So clearly, and I think this is what happened, I think these adult suspects convinced this 16-year-old kid, based on their experience on the streets, based on what they've seen happen in other cases, they convinced him, they said, hey, you do the majority of this. You do the worst parts of this. These attacks. And they're just going to give you a slap on the wrist. You're going to come home. You're going to get a little ankle monitor. You're going to be able to game at home and do everything. There's not going to be consequences for you. And I pray to God that the criminal justice system throws the book at that young man. Because until that happens, there are going to be more 16-year-olds like him who look at what happened in other cases and say, okay, I can get away with this because my friends did too. So you don't have to believe me when I tell you their lack of consequences is to blame for this crime crisis that we're in, particularly the crime crisis when it comes to young men. You don't have to believe me. You don't have to take my word for it. The criminals know. And the criminals are telling us that they believe that there aren't going to be consequences for their actions. Straight from the horse's mouth. All right, our next story today, if you're a subscriber on Locals or Patreon, you got a sneak peek at this morning. We dropped a story about our friend Talana Reed. So the Olympia School District has become a poster child nationally for what happens when you prioritize identity above common sense, when the color of someone's skin, when their gender, when their sexual orientation means more than any other singular thing, their experience for a job, just to name one. So Talana Reed was appointed to the Olympia School Board back in 2022 to fill a vacancy. She was appointed to that position despite some video evidence showing that she probably shouldn't be anywhere near children when it comes to their education. For instance, there was a video of her at a criminal justice rally in 2021 saying this.
F*** the police, and it amazes me how those pigs can sit over there and they don't pay attention until we tear it up. So just see. Before I get started, tear everything up in this f***ing city until they do what you want them to do.
Yeah, as if that wasn't reason enough not to appoint her to a school board. There was another video in 2021 where she was being interviewed about the death of her aunt, which she blamed on police, although there's no evidence to ever substantiate the claims that she's made about the death of her aunt, where she's running for city council and she's saying that she considers herself a threat to security.
If I'm not going to join them, but I'm going to infiltrate and I'm going to get in there and I'm going to be a voice from the inside. They've deemed me a threat to security, and they need to.
So Talana Reed's comments are becoming even more critical to assess in light of some of the security problems that are happening in the Olympia School District. So at Capitol High School, just in the first week of the school year, the first day of school, a 15-year-old brought a loaded handgun to school. A few days later, a 17-year-old was caught in a bathroom stall passing what appeared to be a handgun, it turned out to be a realistic-looking BB gun, over to another student. And so you had two gun-related incidents in the course of about a week, and that led some concerned parents at a board meeting on September 14th to raise the issue of perhaps bringing back school resource officers. The Olympia School District, much like other progressive places of the country and of Washington State, did away with their school resource officers amid all the anti-police animus in 2020. And now some parents are like, hey, we have some serious safety problems, and our schools, in particular our high schools, could really benefit from bringing the SROs back. Here's some parental testimony.
I've had kids at Capitol clear back to 2013, and I've seen the violence and drug issues at the school get progressively worse.
We're the only district in the county that doesn't have SROs right now. And census data shows we have about 60,000 citizens under the age of 18, and only 12 of them are in the juvenile detention system. Using those numbers, that's 0.02%. We've got to turn the tide on our shared perception of law enforcement and how we view them.
But true to form, the Olympia School District and the Olympia School Board of Directors can't just do something because it is the obvious, common sense, correct thing to do. They have to concern themselves with identity. And what is this going to mean for communities of color? What is this going to mean for the sense of safety of our students who don't like cops? What is this going to mean for Director Talana Reed, who called cops pigs and encouraged rioting in her city? And so they're going about this long, laborious process of trying to decide, should school resource officers come back? And if so, what are some restrictions or changes that we should place on the program to make sure everyone feels hunky-dory? So the meeting on September 14th happened, and essentially they just did kind of a paperwork thing where they gave the superintendent permission to begin the process of conversing with the police department about bringing SROs back. And then at a September 28th meeting, and look, there are not many things that surprise me anymore about the Olympia School District. But every once in a while, something happens where I'm like, they can't possibly be that ridiculous. They can't possibly think this is okay. So at the September 28th meeting, there was a decision to create essentially a community safety task force that will work together to develop the best practices if the school resource officers come back. It's going to be made up of 10 students, 4 staff members, 4 community members, and 2 Olympia School District Board of Directors. Do you want to guess who they decided? Which directors they decided to put in charge of determining the future of security in the Olympia Public School District? Well, one of them that they decided would just be perfect for the job was Talana Reed. Here's the school board describing what Talana Reed will be tasked with.
Director Reed and Director Clifthorn, over the last year, have been the lead from the school board in our previous meetings with the City of Olympia and City Council members and leadership at the police department. So perhaps they would be the sponsor from the board. But the purpose would be to assist the superintendent in crafting the procedures to accompany Policy 4311 that will guide and inform any formal partnership with the school district and the police department, but also assist in the crafting of a draft memorandum of understanding to serve as the springboard for any negotiation between the district and the police department for any future school police officer program.
Oh, yes. The school board member who called cops pigs, said F the police, encouraged rioters to tear the city up so they could get their way. The woman who called herself a threat to security has been appointed to help craft how the district will keep students secure moving forward, and will get to help decide whether school resource officers will be able to come back into schools. Someone who said immediately after the meeting that she does not support police officers in schools. And we wonder if she's actually going to be a productive part of the conversations around the SRO program. Here's what she posted to her campaign Facebook page, because yes, she is on the ballot in November because she wants to stay on the school board. I highly, highly recommend Olympia parents really considering whether that's the best idea. But she wrote, as I stated last night, I will not support any motion to permanently place armed police officers into schools. Police are not educators and do not belong in schools except during limited emergency situations. She went on to say, I support the district's work for forming healthy and safe relationships with local law enforcement, but this does not include hiring SROs to be placed in our schools. This is the woman. Call me crazy, but someone who referred to herself as a threat to security?
They've deemed me a threat to security, and they need to.
Probably shouldn't have anything to do with school security. Yet here we are. All right, coming up next in our segment, Unbelievable, our friend Andrea Suarez of We Heart Seattle is unfairly under attack, and we're going to defend her because that's what we do. We defend common sense, reasonable, rational people. I take a week off, Nicole, and I can't talk. I can't speak. Hello, by the way, Nicole.
Hey, Brandy.
We're getting into, we got so much to cover today.
We have a lot.
But later on, you know, maybe in comments, we'll chat a little bit about our week off and what you did and what I did.
Yeah.
All right, before we get
You're looking very good, though. Very married.
Thank you.
Glowing in marriage.
Very married, bliss. Although I realized Mike left his ring at home today, and I called him. I said, taking a little day off of Wedded Bliss. He's like, I forgot it. Not good enough. All right.
Takes a while to get used to.
Yeah, we've been talking about our friend Wes Jones with sellwithwes.com, a wonderful real estate agent in our area. He and his team at Wes Jones & Associates have innovative marketing strategies and tools that you're just not going to get anywhere else. We had Wes Jones back in studio recently to talk about what the first steps might be if you're considering selling your home.
Oh, I think the first step is having an idea of maybe what your home is worth, you know, and having that kind of baseline home value. And that's something that we can do complimentary. You can go to the website, sellwithwes.com. You just plug in your address and we'll get you a value range. And if you want, and if you're serious, you know, I'll come out and do a quick, you know, market analysis for you. That's all complimentary. And then at that time or another time, we could walk through the basic steps of what it would take to get your home ready for the market.
Yeah, and that's all good stuff to know about. And look, you know, if you're looking for a real estate agent, there's a lot of them, obviously. Go talk to a couple of them, but make sure that one of them is Wes Jones, because I think that you're going to find that they have tools that can really help you out, including their Listing Boost concierge service, where they can actually help you and pay ahead of time for any updates you might need to your home. So the first step, go to sellwithwes.com. Start by simply using their home value calculator to see how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. And then you can proceed from there. Sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, woke activists in Seattle are actively working against the very few things that are actually improving outcomes when it comes to homeless individuals. The question is why? Why are they doing it? Let's dive in our segment, Unbelievable. Okay, there is an activist in Seattle named Alicia Ramirez, and she's, I don't know how to describe who she is. She's not a journalist per se. She's just a very vocal activist, very active on Twitter, X in particular. But she is someone who some of the far left, really woke progressives, they care about what she thinks. I mean, I had seen some public disclosure documents related to the King County homelessness, King County Regional Homelessness Authority that were mentioning her and things she had said, and there had been some communique there. So in terms of activists in Seattle, I would say that she is one of the activists who, yeah, there is a segment of the political class that listens to her. And why is that important? Well, why it's important is because she seems to be actively ignoring some of the things like the King County Regional Homelessness Authority that are spending hundreds of millions of dollars and absolutely failing. She doesn't seem to be critical of those things. But when it comes to aspects of the private sector in particular, people or things that are helping, that are doing more than the government to help homeless individuals on our streets, she is actively vilifying and attacking them. There was a really infuriating example over the weekend that I just had to talk about today, because I think it illustrates the lengths that some of these activists will go to, again, push back against things that are actually working in an environment where very few things are working when it comes to homelessness. And there is a motive there. We'll talk about it. So Alicia Ramirez, she, in a multi-part post on X, I'm trying to stop calling it Twitter, in a multi-part post on X, she called out our friend Andrea Suarez of We Heart Seattle, which We Heart Seattle is Undivided's charity of the year. So we have a very special place in our heart for them. And Andrea Suarez is just a citizen of Seattle who became absolutely fed up with how the public parks looked, with the trash, with the homeless encampments. She just started going out and cleaning them out. And now she's turned it into this huge movement. She and her volunteers do much more than clean homeless encampments. They actively try to connect homeless individuals to services, often bypassing the government bureaucracy and red tape and doing it for a lot less money. So anyway, Alicia Ramirez sent out this thread of tweets that I thought, oh man, Andrea, what's going on here? She wrote, Andrea Suarez of We Heart Seattle agreed to help this person living in their bus get home, then abandoned them when they got out of state. Joshua and his dog Cheese are stranded in Lost Hills, California on their way to Big Bear, California from Seattle. He's rejoining his mom who has cancer. Oh my gosh, that sounds terrible. Andrea, why would you abandon this man and his dog Cheese when they're just trying to get home in their bus to his mom who has cancer? And she includes this text messages back and forth where he's basically saying that Andrea left him stranded and he's angry about it. I'm seriously effing peed right now. In part two, Alicia says, currently Joshua and his dog Cheese are out of gas and stranded in Lost Hills, California. They still have about 4 more hours to drive and We Heart Seattle wouldn't help. If you have any money to donate, please drop some at the tags below to help them. So Alicia Ramirez says, oh, where Andrea Suarez won't help this poor guy and his dog, we're going to step up. And she lists his PayPal and his Cash App and his Venmo. And I thought, gosh, Andrea, that doesn't sound like something Andrea would do, just leave a poor guy stranded when she promised to help him out and he's in his bus with his dog. Well, as it turns out, Alicia Ramirez is just lying and she failed to get the full story or failed to reach out to Andrea Suarez or Rehart to Seattle to see what's going on. And in short, she's duped by a man who is living in her boss, his boss. I'll talk more about that in a moment. So Rehart Seattle responds to this Twitter thread and says, has anyone else come up with $500 for Josh? Even when you help out, somehow Alicia finds a way to say you shouldn't. And Andrea Suarez literally provides receipts showing that she gave this man, Joshua Madrid, not $100, not $200, but $500 between September 29th and September 30th. And there were a lot of people on Twitter coming to Andrea's defense saying, hey, you can buy a plane ticket to California for $500. You can take a train to California for $500. And if you're driving to California, you could probably get there for $500, although I don't know if you're driving an old bus that probably gets 6 miles per gallon that you could get there for that. But it shows that Andrea gave this guy $500. What is Alicia Ramirez talking about? So Alicia Ramirez fires back. She says, and then you didn't help him once he got out of state. Save it for someone who believes you, Andrea. So now Alicia Ramirez is saying, well, you helped him a little bit. But then once he was out of state, you left him stranded with his dog and the bus in California, 4 hours from his destination. Only Andrea Suarez once again brings the receipt. She says, actually, the first time we gave him gas money, he was already out of state in California when he called me for gas help. I had nothing to do with him leaving the state, but I had a friend who offered to assist with gas, which he did in the amount of $500. So she says, no, I didn't tell him to leave the state. I didn't urge him to leave the state. I found out that he was trying to get back home to what he says is his cancer-stricken mother. And while he was in California trying to get his bus and his dog back home, we gave him $500. So at this point, Alicia's story has completely crumbled. I mean, We Heart Seattle had the literal receipts to show that the narrative being spun by this activist simply wasn't true. And then Alicia Ramirez goes on to claim that, well, this just wasn't a perfect stranger. You know, you guys said that you would help him. And We Heart Seattle says, I actually never met him. Never even met the guy. The offer was to meet him and assess the situation, ensure he had a home in Cali and a plan. She told her friend that, you know, she'd get the guy's cell. He ended up calling her after he left the state. She says, yeah, he was a stranger to me, but we offered to help because some other person she knew him. So this wasn't Andrea Suarez meeting this homeless individual who was living on his bus with his dog in Seattle and saying, hey, I'm going to get you home to your mom in California. Make sure you have everything you need to get there. No, this guy left on his own. And then he called Andrea while he was on the way and he ran out of gas. But Alicia Ramirez just sticking to her storyline, because even when it has been proven time and time again that her storyline is completely false and that she trusted this guy and then put out his Cash App and his Venmo as if he couldn't possibly have some other motivation for asking the public for money, an activist, she says, this is absolutely not coming down. And those screenshots are dated before he reached out to folks for help, saying that you'd stopped responding. So thanks for confirming the dates, Andrea. Again, this is an activist who has an agenda. Their agenda is to tear anything down when it comes to homelessness that isn't being done exactly in the way they want it to be done. I'd also note that Andrea Suarez, as a volunteer with We Heart Seattle, she has no obligation, nor does We Heart Seattle, to give this guy any money to help him in any way get to his destination. This is something that they did out of the goodness of their heart after getting a phone call saying he was stranded. So why would an activist waste an ounce of energy tearing someone like Andrea down for doing something nice? Why wouldn't Alicia Mirez instead approach this from the position of, hey, We Heart Seattle already gave him $500. He still says he's a little bit short. Does anybody else want to pitch in? And then you could look at it as this wonderful coming together of the activists and Andrea Suarez to help get this guy home to, allegedly, his cancer-stricken mother. And the reason I keep saying allegedly is because this individual seems to be trying to utilize activists to get more money, which I can't imagine he needs since he's already gotten $500 and apparently you know what it did away. So I'm not going to automatically believe that he has a cancer-stricken mother that he's trying to get home to. It is not the job of We Heart Seattle to get a man, a dog, and his old rickety bus from Washington State to California. And there is no reason that activists should be going to these lengths to tear them down for helping to the extent that they did. No reason besides they just simply can't stand that Andrea Suarez and the private sector are doing more than the bloated government agencies that are spending hundreds of millions of dollars and not helping people one bit. Truly unbelievable. All right, coming up next, the much talked about Fox News video where they came to Seattle and heard from a bunch of Seattleites who claimed to not even know that there was a crime crisis happening all around them. I'll give my take on that. It happened while I was gone and I could not wait to discuss it. But first, we've been talking about our friends at First Mark Insurance, firstmarkinsurance.com. Mike and I are members of the First Mark family. All of our insurance is taken care of by them. And I can't tell you how much of a relief that is. We don't have to every year wonder, is our policy enough? Is our policy being renewed? What do we have to do? First Mark's doing it for us. We don't do anything. It's really, really nice. Mike and I took the First Mark Challenge in the spring, which basically entails you going over your current insurance, talking to them a little bit, you can do it virtually, about your insurance needs. They go out, they shop the market for you, and they come back and they make a proposal. Here's Dave Taylor. He's the CEO of First Mark. He explained what they hope you take away from the First Mark Challenge.
One of our goals that we say is that we believe everybody deserves to feel confident about their insurance. And so that's really one of our primary drivers of those conversations is we don't expect you to remember everything we talked about, but we hope that at the end of that process, you're going to feel confident that you have what you need and also confident that if you have a question, someone's going to pick up the phone and take care of it for you down the road.
Yeah, I think that's the big thing is you don't have to call some massive insurance company with a giant phone tree and get all confused and stuff. You call a local company, veteran-owned. If you have a problem or you need to make a claim, you call First Mark first, and they're going to walk you through the process, which I think is really awesome when it comes to insurance. So firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. They work for you. Nicole's like, Brandy, why are you being so dramatic right now? All right. Some Seattleites are pretending there isn't a crime crisis, which isn't clever and it's not empathetic. And I'm trying to understand what motivates them. Let's get to it. This segment is presented in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. All right. By now, if you're plugged in, you've probably seen the video. It was all over social media while we were gone. So Fox News, I think it was Jesse Waters' show, they sent, you know, one of their correspondents here to talk to Seattleites about the obvious crime and drug crisis. Here's a clip.
Jesse sent Johnny to the progressive hellscape where residents mocked the idea that the city is spiraling out of control.
I've never seen any crime in Seattle. I've never seen any of it. I've seen fun and laughter and fun.
I don't believe that number.
People, they're, you know, getting robbed out here, carjacked.
I've never heard of anyone getting robbed.
Crime is a social issue that could be solved by giving people their basic needs.
It's not a thing that happens just on the street. People don't just come up and try to rob people on the street. Do you walk around every day? Like, someone's going to rob me every second?
Seattle decriminalized drug use, and then they criminalized it again.
Oh, my God. Who are you getting these facts from? You're from New York. Apparently, you're listening to the wrong people.
I saw a lot of people shooting up on my way down here.
Oh, did you? Okay. And they were bothering you?
I was in a car, but, you know, people...
Oh, no, you're in a car. Oh, no, they were hurting you so bad. Oh, no.
Here's the thing. That is genuinely embarrassing. You know, as I was watching the reactions in Seattle, you know, among folks on social media to this, they were mocking Fox News. When I watch that video, my automatic inclination is not to mock Fox News. It's to wonder what the heck the people in that video from Seattle think they're accomplishing. Now, yeah, is this a story that was clearly designed as red meat for a Fox News audience? Yes. You know, that's what we call man on the street interviews. It was, and I don't know what was left on the cutting room floor. There could have been plenty of Seattleites who expressed sincere concern about what's happening on the streets, and Fox News might have edited all that out and then left just the doofy ones in there to make some sort of political point. I mean, that's entirely possible as well. However, to hear any Seattleites just to what, to dunk on Fox News, to prove a point about Fox News, deny the depths of the crisis that we're in, it's not clever, it's not cute, it's not compassionate, and it's certainly not progressive. You know, I don't need Fox News, or I don't need, you know, Seattleites on the street to tell us that there's a drug crisis. I mean, the numbers bear it out. You take one walk downtown to see people actively using drugs, to see people overdosing on drugs. We know that we're in the depths of a drug crisis. And the numbers say that our fentanyl crisis here is worse than any other place in the country. You know, and to hear that woman who, you know, some Seattle progressives were just celebrating, the woman in the green jacket in the video, just celebrating on Twitter because she got Fox News. You know, she mocked Fox News on their channel. You know, to hear her say, well, people aren't just, you know, coming up to people randomly and victimizing them. The first thing I thought of was Ina Kwan. Very first thing I thought of, who was just in her car downtown with her husband near the restaurant they own. She was pregnant and was shot to death. Yeah, crime is happening to random people. I mean, we just got done talking about the arrests that were made in the string of violent attacks on elderly Asian Americans. When you downplay the crime crisis, you downplay things like that. It's a slap in the face to victims, to people who have experienced it and are experiencing it at increasingly high levels. And, you know, for all the talk of how caring and, again, progressive Seattle voters are, when I see them dismiss the drug crisis, you know, she asked the Fox News guy, well, was it hurting you? Was it hurting you to see people using while you were driving by? Yeah, it is. It does hurt us. Hurts our hearts. It hurts, you know, our sense of safety and security in the city that we love, because that's what compassion is. You know, when you see people who are actively killing themselves on sidewalks, that doesn't hurt you, because you want to make a point against Fox News. That can't be where we're at as a city. You know, Fox News aside, forget them. I don't know if Fox News really cares about what's happening in Seattle or cares to see it better. I mean, the state of Seattle and Portland and the West Coast is probably very good for them when it comes to content and ratings, whatever. Forget them. But let's just think about us. Let's think about our cities. Let's think about our fellow humans. Downplaying the crime crisis and the drug crisis does nothing for us. It does nothing for the people who are suffering. And no amount of dunking on Fox News is going to make that better. All right, that segment was brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. I highly recommend you signing up for their newsletter. You can be alerted to opportunities to make a difference in this state of ours. Okay, let's dip outside of Washington State for a moment. I also feel like I should update people on Miranda. Just because she's part of the show, and I know she hasn't given me permission to, but I don't think she'd mind. My sister's back in the emergency room today. So you guys might recall, like, a few months ago, she had a severe asthma attack, had to be rushed to the emergency room, spent several days there. This one sounds like it was even worse. She had just been here, just got back home. So I'll update you guys, but I haven't even been able to speak to her yet. It's been, like, 40 hours, and we've been in touch with her boyfriend and stuff, but I'll make sure that you guys know how she's doing. I mean, obviously, we won't be talking to her on Thursday, but, you know, you guys are part of our family, and she's part of our undivided family. And so if I seem a little, like, bummed today, I just talked to my mom again before I came in. So just updating you guys. All right, national news going on. I just can touch on this quick. Look, you know, there was the shutdown that we avoided. That's fine. You guys don't come to me for my assessment of national politics. However, I had to point out Jay Inslee. I think he forgot that he's not running for president anymore. Or maybe he's hoping that Biden eventually cannot follow through and that they'll pick him over Gavin Newsom. Because he was tweeting about...
Oh, you think that's a big dream.
You don't dream big, Jay. dream big, Jay. He was tweeting on his account for governor, Funding the U.S. government is no place for brinksmanship, and Ukraine must not be the casualty of shameless partisan games. Beginning today, Congress should swiftly pass full-year appropriation legislation with robust support for Ukraine and Ukrainian refugees. Congressional leaders can and must do better than budgeting by crisis. There is no excuse for delaying action that meets the needs of the American people or support for our Ukrainian friends defending against a violent assault on the front lines of democracy. When's the last time Jay sent out a two-part tweet about our crime crisis?
Right.
A two-part tweet about our drug crisis, about the needs of our state and the people in our state. And that's not some sort of indictment on what's happening in Ukraine or whether I support, you know, the U.S. funding for that. But here you got a governor from Washington State who's spending a lot of time caring about what Congress does and does not appropriate for an entirely different country. Well, he shows a pretty little care and concern for some of the crises happening on his own streets. All right, in much more interesting national news, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is reportedly going to run for president as an independent. So he's been running as a Democrat. But there's not much running that he can do because the Democratic Party simply won't allow it. And it's one of my big qualms with both of the political parties is that when they've got their person, like, you cannot, they will not allow there to be any sort of primary process. I mean, kudos to Republicans for at least allowing other Republicans to take the debate stage and to run against Trump. I think it's a little different for them because he's not the incumbent president. If he were the incumbent president, Republicans would absolutely not allow that. But RFK has been unable to get really any momentum or a fair shake from Democrats because Biden's their guy, right? So now he's saying that he's going to run as an independent, which I gotta say, when I first heard it, I was like, fabulous. Just great, because I love anyone who's willing to challenge the two-party duopoly. And I think that at some point, you know, there's been shifts in our political parties and systems since the country's founding. At some point, there needs to be another shift to get out of this deep division that we're in. And I think that has to be viable independent candidates. Now, do I think that he can win? No. However, I think the question is, who does he hurt more by running? Now, prevailing wisdom would say if you have a Democrat break off and be an independent, then it would hurt Democrats more. I don't know if that's the case with RFK Jr. You know, Democrats have tried to successfully paint him amongst their own party as some, you know, right-wing wacko conspiracist. Now, you know, certainly there are a lot of Democrats who don't like the idea of a Biden second term, who are like, that makes no sense. Like, he can barely do the job right now. And maybe they would look at RFK Jr. as a possible other option. And I think there are also a lot of Republicans who are never Trumpers, who don't want to vote for the guy, who would say, hey, RFK Jr. seems to be a good alternative to that. And then there's a huge swath of the country that's independent and doesn't like either the political parties very much. I'll tell you that if it came down to Trump and Biden, I might vote for some RFK Jr. just to a little shock in the system. So I'm very interested to watch this. I'm very interested to see what kind of momentum and fundraising he gets and which party vilifies him more. Because that's the key. Whichever party vilifies him more, that's the party that's worried the most about him. We saw that when Howard Schultz of Starbucks was floating his potential bid as a centrist independent for the presidency, and that just sort of crashed and failed because he realized that in Seattle, people wouldn't let go of the Sonics thing, as they shouldn't. But it was Democrats who were vilifying that the most. I remember the state chair of the Democratic Party who was, don't do it, Howard, because they believed that running as a centrist independent, given who he was, would actually hurt Democrats more. So it'll be very, very fascinating to watch. All right, before we get to questions and comments, I got married. Mm-hmm. And I felt fantastic on my big day, walking down the aisle to say yes to the man of my dreams, in part because I lost more than 35 pounds on the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic plan. Now, I will say, when you see my wedding pictures, the weight loss was one element. The very tight corset was another. However, I just am so glad, looking at the picture of me from October of 2022 to now, I'm so glad that I did this for myself before I got married. Because looking back at the pictures, I love like every single one of them. And you just don't want to look back with regret and be like, why didn't I lose my COVID weight before my wedding? So I'm just so glad. And I started the program about this time last year. I started it November 1st of last year. So you could, this time next year, if you start it, you could have those same results too. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. Start by simply scheduling a free 15-minute consultation with Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team. There's no drugs, no injections, no prepackaged meals, no counting calories, no strenuous workout routines. It really is about teaching you what to eat in the right portions and then coming up with a plan so you can do the program for life without feeling like you're on a lifelong diet, which is what we all want. So EastsideWeightLossClinic.com, EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. Schedule that free 15-minute consultation. And keep me up to date, by the way, if you do start the program. All right, let's get to some questions and some comments. We've got a really good close and sanity check for you today on a little debacle involving a fire alarm. On my marriage, D-Man in Seattle says, is there any difference now that you're married? Not yet. I mean, Mike and I have lived together for so long. No, not yet. I would say my stress level is probably going to gradually come down because planning for the wedding was super stressful.
Well, one thing that changed is Mike isn't allowing you to post his face on social media.
Yes, I posted pictures of Mike on social media, so exciting. Everybody knows I actually had a significant other.
I would say so that's exciting. I'm trying to think of something else that's changed. Anything
besides my radiant glow and my
happiness?
Yeah, except
for your glow and Mike's face.
I will. Actually, one thing will change. Mm-hmm. I'll get on Mike's insurance so I don't have to buy my own insurance through the exchange or whatever.
Ooh,
it is.
That's exciting.
That'll be nice.
That's really exciting.
Yes. All right. Beth Dutton says, I just ordered your black undivided ball cap. Love it. Welcome back. I hope you tell us a bit about your wedding. Oh, I'm glad. Yeah, we're doing good on the merch sales. And I think actually tomorrow we're being restocked on bigger sizes. So I'll alert you guys because people are like, there's no extra large or extra, extra large. There will be. But our red hats, our Make Common Sense Great Again hats are almost sold out. I almost am tempted not to reorder them.
Limited.
So it's like limited.
Yeah, then people just make more money than us on eBay.
Yeah, that's true. They probably already stole it. Can I just say that it's copywritten? It's not, but like I'll just say it and then they won't even try.
Let's all get it copywritten.
Two Ladies Midwest Adventures. Brandy, can we ask what is your most memorable moment from your wedding? Oh gosh, there's so many. I think just in general, it is like when you get to the end of the aisle and I saw him there and his eyes were all red and he was like trying not to cry.
He started crying early. Said you were going to hurt him if he didn't cry.
Yes. And so, you know, and I wish one of the bummers about being the bride is you don't get to see everyone walk down the aisle. Mm-hmm. And so that's one of like the bummers that I'm looking forward to seeing pictures because I can't actually see you and my sister and the dogs and everyone walk down the aisle. But seeing Mike up there and just being like, oh, it's my person. And then honestly, having my out-of-state family in town was so meaningful to me. You know, we lost our cousin midsummer, who was just 38 years old, and his parents were able to make it. And I think it was good for them to kind of get away. And Mike just loves them. And so just seeing my aunts and uncles there and my cousin, it was really fun
to spend time with them too.
Yeah.
Javi and Miranda, having them in town all week, that was so fun.
It was a good time.
They're a fun bunch, man.
All right, Brandolyn Beardshearwood says, what the hell is happening to schools working with parents? What happens to protecting the children from sexualization, drug, and crime? Now they want to groom kids, separate the families, and let homeless people on drugs around the schools, and they want to take your parental rights. How did America fall so far? Yeah, I mean, we should have woken up when they were defending homeless encampments, like, next to school playgrounds.
Right.
Who... Well, why? I don't understand. That's the thing.
I don't know
like,
why the crazy wins, because we all said that was ridiculous.
It was like, come on, guys.
I don't know why the crazy keeps winning these battles.
Well, it's because they're loudest. Escalating. And regular people are like, I don't want to get involved in that. I don't want people to yell at me. You got to get involved.
Get it.
You got to be okay
gotta
being
be
yelled
involved.
At.
And don't give up.
Oh,
don't,
my gosh, because that stuff's ridiculous. All right. On the vilification of We Heart Seattle, GTBD00 says, because We Heart Seattle is taking bacon off their plate and doing a much better service to the community, in my honest opinion. That's probably right.
Mm-hmm.
Is like, you know, this Alicia Ramirez, she has ties to the King County Regional Homelessness Authority. You know, there's emails that show it. In fact, we should do, you know, a story on that.
Mm-hmm.
Where she's, you know, kind of in cahoots with them, I would say. And so, of course, she's not going to criticize them and all their failures. But Andrea Suarez gave $500 to a guy in a bus and his dog. How dare she?
Well, she helped him leave. That's the point. She got rid of one homeless person.
Yeah.
So now we don't have that person here causing more chaos.
The homeless industrial complex, she's a threat.
Right.
She's a threat to the homeless industrial complex.
Keeps sending them away.
She keeps sending them away. Matthew
we
Coop
want
says,
them here.
Hi, Brandy. Apparently you live rent-free in Alicia Ramirez's head. That's good, since by her own account, she has no paying job. Have you ever reached out to her, have a dialogue with you?
Yes, we have.
Have we?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't.
Oh, wait. I think maybe I reached out to her previously, but yes, yeah. I've reached out and don't get responses.
Yeah, well, here's the thing, is there are a lot of people I disagree with that I'm more than happy to have a dialogue with, but people who are clearly unhinged, there's nothing you can say, there's nothing you can do to change their mind, to have a reasonable conversation, people who won't correct themselves even when it's shown. I've told you guys a lot, she's not a journalist, but I've told you, you watch out for journalists who won't correct their errors. If they won't correct their errors, they're not a journalist. And so I think the inability when presented with literal receipts to say, hey, we were wrong, like, good on you for giving this guy $500. Maybe we could get a little more money through donations to get him the rest of the way. Like, that's...
Can you imagine her saying... I can't even imagine it coming out of her Twitter.
That would be because way too reasonable.
Talk. Right. And that's the thing. She's not... Well, she can't back up her actions or her opinions on anything.
Yeah. No, ridiculous.
It's all on Twitter.
All right. On the Fox News story, and the Seattleites acting oblivious to the crime crisis, Keith Stone says they're ripe for the city council. Yeah, sign that chick in the green coat up for city
that
council.
Lady.
Love it.
I do wish that they would have come back with her, or, you know, given her a couple examples of the examples we used and said, well, how do you feel about this? And people are dying of drugs, and that's okay to you then? Like, make it difficult for her to... make it a joke.
Well, and that's when you get into, like, this was just a doofus man on the street interview. The idea was not to go to Seattle and perform some serious act of journalism. That's not what it was. Man on the street interviews, by the way, are completely worthless. When I started at Fox 13, like 10 years ago, it was kind of a joke, but I told the news director who hired me, I'm not doing man on the street interviews. That man on the street interviews are what you do as a quote-unquote journalist or reporter when you're not actually able to gather any, like, relevant or expert information. So you're like, let's just go out and see what person I find on the corner of 3rd and Pike has to say about this.
Right.
But it's ridiculous.
But then at the same time, people are voting for people like Andrew Lewis again. People are not voting for sane people in the city. So to me, she represents the people voting, right? Because that is the delusional world that they live in, where nothing's going wrong. I mean, it must be nice to live in that world, really.
I think about that all the time. I would love to live in that level of delusion. Mm-hmm. I would love it. Yeah. All right. Mugshot Espresso says, all you have to do is walk around Belltown, then tell me everything is fine. Well, there are, to Nicole's point, there are people who live in Belltown who are voting for Andrew Lewis. Try to understand that. Brandolin says, the lady in green coat was just childish, and it shows she has no common sense. I mean, who cares if kids have to watch people shooting up, right? Richard O'Neill, compassionate and caring people don't allow people to live in alleyways and eat out of garbage cans. Elect politicians and judges who will enact laws and policies that will not tolerate the current conditions. Go to treatment or go to jail. And that's the thing, is like, they pretend that they have the moral high ground, that they are the compassionate ones and the progressive ones, when their words and their actions say everything but that. They don't care if people continue to live in those conditions. They don't care if they die on a sidewalk with a needle in their arm. And that's what we're seeing. All right. On Governor Jay Inslee, thinking he's still running for president, D.C. Bindwell says, not one more penny to Ukraine. We need a complete audit on the billions already received. We the people demand accountability and reform. Jay says, oh, happy birthday, Dory. I miss you. And Ken also said, happy birthday to Dory. Yeah, you let me know before the show that it was Dory's birthday today. Yeah. And it was nice to see his wife, Suzanne, at the wedding. She gave grace and also gave us some advice that was used during the ceremony. And we had Dave Wyman, who is our officiant, who was a friend of Dory's. And so it was just a nice way to kind of
shout out during the ceremony.
Yeah, and one of Dory's daughters came as well. So it was a nice way to kind of tie him in to the day's events. Yeah, it was very meaningful. But thank you, everyone, for your well wishes for Dory and Nicole for
and
reminding
for Miranda.
Everyone.
Lots of well wishes coming in for Miranda. And thank you for prayers, thoughts, all the things. Yeah. So I'm glad you mentioned it, because all the good vibes going her way.
Well, I'm just going to have to get her to move here, because I was looking at the cities for people who have severe asthma. Miami's not on the list. That's not like the hot, humid climate. Seattle's like towards the top of there's lists for this.
I would not have thought Seattle was that high. We have so many trees and plants and, you know, when it's,
you
get allergies.
So clean and yes. Well, yeah. I had it on there. I think it's better than Miami.
Okay. Yeah.
So maybe
let's
start a move to, not to Seattle.
I talked to Javi about it. I think he might be.
They like it here.
Swayed.
All right. Before we get to what might be my favorite sanity check of all time, because I love a little fire alarm shenanigans, we've been talking about Bulwark Capital, our friend Zach Abraham, and how, you know, we talked with him on the show last week about Bidenomics and the true train wreck that's coming our way when we have created an economy that's just on printed money and it's basically one giant house of cards. So if you're nearing retirement or maybe you're already in retirement, the question to really ask yourself is, can my portfolio withstand what is going to come when Bidenomics comes crashing down. Here's what Zach Abraham said he and his team at Bulwer Capital can do to help with that.
We think the world is going insane. We think that the world is propped up on all kinds of, you know, we know, propped up printed money. And you're playing a game that has to end badly, right? Now, when it ends, when you hear all these prognosticators financially talking about when it ends, it kind of reminds me of when God's coming back. Nobody knows, right? But what it does mean is that you need a portfolio that can do two things. It can keep up with inflation and not get you buried. But also, when the inevitability of living and perpetuating an economy on printed money, when that inevitability comes to the fore, you need a portfolio that can stand up against anything, right?
Yeah. And I mean, you guys have worked so hard for what you have. Managing risk is so critical, especially the closer that you get to retirement. So go to knowyourriskradio.com, knowyourriskradio.com. Reach out to Zach Abraham and his team at Bulwer Capital Management to talk about your risk and how you can manage it. And also remember, Zach joins us every Thursday on the show. Now, this week, we're talking about one thing you definitely shouldn't do if you're close to retirement. Don't take advice from financial experts on TikTok. Have you seen the proliferation of financial experts on Instagram and TikTok? And most of them are like in their 20s talking about Bitcoin and stuff. For the love of God. So Zach Abraham and I are going to talk about that coming up on Thursday's show. All right, a congressman pulled a fire alarm, presumably to delay a vote. But he also thinks that we're all stupid and we won't blame him for pulling a fire alarm. Let's get to it in our closing sanity check. All right. So, of course, there was the whole back and forth and rush to make sure that the government didn't shut down. And during that, Democrats were trying to delay a vote. And what was really weird is in the office building that's adjacent to the Capitol, and that's where all the members of Congress come, and they'll go through the tunnels and they'll come up to the Capitol to get a vote. So it was very clear Democrats were trying to delay a vote. And then all of a sudden, and this is actually from Marjorie Taylor Greene, all of a sudden, there was a shrieking noise in the hallway of the office building. Oh, that's weird. The fire alarm was going off at this very critical juncture as these votes were about to happen. Very, very strange. So some rumors start to circulate that Capitol Police had a photograph of the individual responsible. And it turned out to be a United States congressman, Jamal Bowman, who is a Democrat representing his district in New York. So clear as day, all the Capitol press is like, wow, that sure looks a lot like Congressman Bowman. Turns out that it was. So they've got him literally red-handed with his hand on the red fire alarm, pulling it just before that fire alarm went off. And of course, the building had to be evacuated. And so you'd think, okay, well, what excuse in the world could there be for a congressman to pull a fire alarm? I guess the only excuse is there's an emergency, right? Or a fire? Was there? No, there wasn't. I'm going to read for you his entire statement because it is just that good. He says, I want to personally clear up confusion surrounding today's events. Today, as I was rushing to make a vote, I came to a door that is usually open for votes, but today it would not open. I am embarrassed to admit that I activated the fire alarm, mistakenly thinking it would open the door. I regret this and sincerely apologize for any confusion this caused. But I want to be very clear. This was not me in any way trying to delay any vote. It was the exact opposite. I was trying urgently to get to a vote, which I ultimately did and joined my colleagues in a bipartisan effort to keep our government open. I also met after the vote with the Sergeant at Arms and the Capitol Police at their request and explained what had happened. My hope is that no one will make more of this than it was. I'm sure that is your hope. He goes on to say, I'm working hard every day, including today, to do my job, to do it well, and deliver for my constituents. So let's evaluate that. When he says, you know, today I was rushing for this vote, I came upon these doors that were usually open when, you know, if you've been in the Capitol, you know that they take the tunnels to this. So he says, I come to these doors, it wouldn't open, and so my only thought was, why don't I pull the fire extinguisher?
Like he thought it was the wheelchair access, like right? The like, button pull. That you push.
Sure,
you
yeah, totally pull. Reasonable. So let's take a look at the door in question that he came to that he thought should have been open for him, that the fire alarm would most certainly open for him. So the door was very clearly marked, emergency exit only,
with a big red sign right in front of the double doors. And then it instructed people that in the event of an emergency, you can push the door for 3 seconds, an alarm will sound, and then the door will unlock after 30 seconds. Now, does that look to you like a door that is typically open for them to go out of for votes? And would any rationally thinking person approach that sign and the two signs on the double door and think, huh, well, maybe what I'll do is pull this thing clearly marked fire alarm. And those doors will open right up. In fact, there were some longtime members of the Capitol Hill press corps, like Jake Sherman, who's the founder of Punch Bowl News, who saw right through the congressman's absolutely ridiculous claims and said so on Twitter. He said, for those who work on Capitol Hill, or even those who don't, this makes no sense. Have you ever in your life activated a fire alarm in a large public building to open a door? There are tunnels that take you from this building straight to the Capitol. It's very easy. I do it daily. So why would a member of Congress believe that they could get away with such a patently absurd excuse for pulling a fire alarm? Well, maybe it's because there are still major media outlets who will just regurgitate that storyline without questioning it at all.
Just before the House was scheduled to vote on that funding bill, New York Congressman Jamal Bowman pulled a fire alarm inside the Cannon House office building. This photo has just been released by U.S. Capitol Police. Congressman Bowman told reporters he was trying to get through a door and thought the alarm would open that door. His spokesperson says it was an accident and that the congressman regrets any confusion. Some Republicans in the House want Bowman censured for his actions. Capitol Police say they are investigating.
There were some reports that began to emerge about Representative Bowman, who was seen pulling some sort of fire alarm in the Cannon House office building earlier today. We got a statement on that saying Congressman Bowman did not realize he would trigger a building alarm as he was rushing to make an urgent vote. The congressman regrets any confusion, just to clarify some things on that, because I know there was likely some folks kind of scratching their heads wondering what it was they were asking Speaker McCarthy about.
Yeah, just to clarify some things, again, you just regurgitate whatever they send to you without questioning it at all. It's not the media's job to regurgitate obviously ridiculous statements. It's the media's job to be critical of them and to ask themselves before they pass that along to you, hey, does this really make sense? Does this really hold water? So perhaps Congressman Bowman knew that outlets like MSNBC and CBS and CNN would just carry water for him, or perhaps he knew that his own party would just circle around them, because as we know of both political parties, they have no moral compass, and they will defend a member of their party even when a member of their party did something that was so obviously wrong and ridiculous. Take AOC for an example.
He's fully participating in saying there was a misunderstanding, but what I do think is important to raise is the fact that Republicans immediately moved to file motions to censure, motions to expel, before there has even been conversations that are finished to even see if there was a misunderstanding here. What they did not do was to commit to the same when George Santos was actually found guilty after a thorough investigation of 13 federal charges. He's indicted on everything from wire fraud to actual lying, but they're filing a motion to expel a member who, in a moment of panic, was trying to escape a vestibule. Give me a break.
Give me a break, indeed.
It would have been more believable if he just said, I thought there was a fire.
That would have been a better line.
Whoops.
Whoops. Give me a break indeed. All right. That has been it for today's episode of Undivided. That has been your sanity check. That has been it for today's episode of Undivided. Great to be back after a week off for Wedded Bliss. Thank you for hanging in there with us. Thank you for all your well wishes from Miranda. I'll update you guys when I know more of how she's doing. I appreciate every single one of you. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. If you have not already, please do help set us up for success here on the Undivided Podcast. Become a subscriber for just $5 a month at undividedpod.com. While you're there, shop our merch store. We've got plenty of good offerings, hats, mugs, shirts, whatever. See you guys tomorrow at noon.